Randy?
Let's roll.
All right, let's roll. Places to be today, things to do. All right. All right, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colker meeting for our regular scheduled commission meeting. We're a little bit later than normal because of the governor's budget address this morning. But today is Wednesday, December 3rd, approximately 1:30 p.m. We actually have a relatively short agenda. We've got a lot of things to talk about in discussion and scheduling. I do have a couple opening comments, and I'll turn it over to my colleagues. The first thing I just wanted to do for those out there listening, just to pass along my regrets and thoughts about Mayor Wallacher. Danny was a good friend. I got to know him very, very well over the last decade and a half, from my workings at NDSU to my time in Fargo as a recruiter dealing with him and as the mayor. And really a good guy, and his wife Mary and his daughter Shannon and Aaron, and my thoughts are out to them. I was not at this event, but I want to pass along a Mayor Wallacher story. Apparently when his daughters were young, they used to have three-legged races in the backyards, and instead of using gunny sacks, they used to use their dad's pants. And so it was legendary that the kids would go over there for birthday parties. So he was a good mayor. He'll be missed, and a really good guy. So depending when the funeral is, I hope to get over there, and Danny will be missed. He always is a good, candid voice, and I think, for me, when he said, evacuation is not an option, get back to work, and we went back to Sandbag, and that was pretty good. So and he held, of course. So our thoughts out to Mayor Wallacher and his family. I guess a couple notes on a personal note. I'll be out in D.C. next week, Monday and Tuesday, to meet with Ben Yamagata. He's the head of the Coal Utilization Research Council. So it's a twofold. One is part of my NARUC duties, another is part of this commission as we figure out what we're going to do with these CO2 rules. So I'm going to meet with Ben and see what some of his organization is doing, as well as got meetings set up with Senator Hoeven and Ryan Bernstein and Senator Heitkamp, and I think it's Liam is her environmental guru, trying to go through our comments that we filed with them and see what their thoughts are, what they can do on their end to help curb some of these CO2 rules. So keep, you know, just because we filed our comments last week doesn't mean we're not going to do anything from here till June. I think we've done what we can at the state level. Now it's work with our colleagues at the federal level, and I will swing by and talk to Congressman Cramer as well. I know Kevin is very in tune with what we're doing here, so I didn't make a special appointment with talking to him. And his chief, of course, so used to work with us, so I know they're very familiar with what we're doing. And then finally, and we'll probably talk about it more at the end, but just my perspective, I guess, this morning on the governor's budget address. I thought it was a really sound budget he put forward for the PSC. Josh had a chance to go through it with Krista, so we've not delved all the way into the details, but it looks like the positions that we asked for have been included. The litigation fund was also moved on. We've got I think it gives us what we need to do our job for the next couple of years. I understand this is not the final say. The legislature certainly will look at the budget hard, and there will be changes, and we'll have our own budget testimony that we'll give. And there was some changes as far as our equity requests and our travel and leave and some other things, but I think that's all part of the legislative process. But at first blush, I thought it was a very sound budget, and I look forward to the discussion over the next few months. And really, I guess that's the challenge. I thought one thing I was very surprised, quite honestly, the governor seemed like he was very upbeat today, and he was he put it out there. He said there's a lot going on, there's a lot of resources we're going to need, and probably one of the biggest budgets that I've seen come forward in a while. So I guess that's my opening thoughts. I'll turn it over to Commissioner Christman.
Well, you know, I certainly didn't know the mayor nearly as well as you, but sometimes, you know, how I like to talk about old stories and interesting characters from North Dakota history, and he certainly was that. You know, he had just a kind of a flair for just laying it all right out there. You certainly never had to wonder where he stood on an issue or something like that, and we'll certainly miss him as a character, and wish I had had the opportunity to get to know him better. But the budget, certainly interesting, and these always are, and it just is such a tough issue to tackle, I would think, for the governor and for OMB. You know, when things are growing this much and you have to do things to accommodate growth, and yet you don't want to get too carried away and overstep what growth might occur. And so as much of a struggle as budgets always were back in the 90s when we didn't have money, I think it's actually harder to do these budgets when things are really rolling along like they are in North Dakota right now. So tough project for the governor, and I commend him for laying something on the table, and now the legislature has some heavy lifting to do for 4 months, and I'm confident in North Dakota's system of governance, where the legislature is made up of a lot of citizen legislators from around the state. I think we're going to come out with a good package in the end.
Thank you, Randy. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Sure. I'll add a few comments on the budget as well. Having worked in the governor's office for 6 years, I had worked on three budgets during that time period, and it's always interesting this time of year because I think back to what they have gone through, and while he gives this presentation, this work started back in March and is really a daily job in that office for many, many months, and so it's quite an accomplishment to pull all the pieces together and put it out there in a thoughtful way, and I think the governor really did that in his laying out some significant priorities. I was very encouraged with the investments that he's calling for in enhanced regulation of the oil and gas industry. I think we've got a lot of great players in this industry, but it's growing really fast, and I think that it's really important that the state has the resources to keep up and to provide a good watchful eye on the industry and hold them accountable to high standards. And so you've got the three big players, the health department, the oil and gas division, and the PSC all receiving additional resources in this budget to do that. I was pleased that he embraced the rail safety program that the PSC has in our budget and the pipeline program, the hazardous liquids pipeline program, and increases for the gas safety as well. So now we'll put together some additional numbers and make the case to the legislature on those programs. I also was pleased to see the additional investments in law enforcement, $90 million in law enforcement. I think that's an important priority for the people of the state. And then also very strong funding for Western North Dakota. And so I think that those are all things that I heard a lot about during the campaign. And it's I think the governor did a good job of reflecting the issues that I heard people concerned about during the campaign in a budget that sets priorities now for the legislature moving forward. So look forward to the next step, which is working with the legislature and helping make the arguments to them to keep what the governor proposed, at least for the Public Service Commission.
All right, thank you, Julie. I just maybe add, you queued up the two new programs. I agree with you. I think that'll be – I'm glad to see they were in there, and we'll continue the discussion. I just wanted to note that our highest priority that we requested was an additional weights and measures position, which we had four in last session. We lost one, so that has been in this budget reinstated, as well as an additional natural gas inspector for the growth in natural gas lines. So those two positions, I think, hopefully those are on the most solid ground. And the other ones, I think there'll be a lot of discussion around them. But that's nice to see that they were in there because of the last session. Okay, before I move passage of consent items, there is one request I have for my colleagues that on consent BK1, the third one down, I'd like to delete that off the list. And I'll tell you why. Basically, I thought some more about it. We were removing the six-month caller, not giving any time frame. So I would like to take that off and talk more about it during admin. I think we have to put some kind of caller on that. And so whether it's 9 months or something else, but I wanted to talk to the two of you again some more about that. But I do want to move forward with the rest of these. So if you're okay with deleting it off this list and moving that to admin, I would like to do that.
Okay, fine with that.
Okay, so with that, I'd move passage of the items on consent, with the exception of line number 3 in item CBK1, which is amend and reenact subsection 1 of section 490506 relating to suspension periods for tariff filings.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just if you can just remind me to make sure we talk about that in admin, and if we want to put it, we'll move it back now at that time.
All right. Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. We'll move right to the regular agenda, item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning Everett Hall, case number GS-14-259.
Second.
Thank you, Julie. Everett Hall is a North Dakota landowner with a mailing address of Box 961, Newtown, North Dakota. Senex Pipeline is a Minnesota company with principal offices at 5500 Senex Drive, Inner Grove Heights, Minnesota. On May 24th of this year, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from Senex. The complaint alleged a violation by Everett Hall occurred by he violated North Dakota Century Code, particularly Chapter 4923, the one-call evacuation notice system. Our staff did a thorough investigation, and based on the investigation, staff determined that Everett did not provide an excavation notice to North Dakota One-Call Notification Center. And based on the investigation, staff concluded that on May 23rd, Everett began an excavation as defined under North Dakota law in the Newtown area, and that he struck the Senex line. The line was not damaged, so that's very good, I guess, that it wasn't damaged. There was no agreement, and basically, as it walks through, this consent order, Mr. Hall, he admits that he didn't use the one-call system. He sent us a letter saying that, he wishes he would have. He learned his lesson. He doesn't feel he has the financial ability to pay any kind of fine as part of his pleadings. And so this order and this consent decree, basically, we fine Mr. Hall $500, but we will not impose that fine unless he has an additional violation of North Dakota One Call. And so I think this is very appropriate individual. He learned his lesson. Nothing was damaged. No one was injured. We fine him, but we suspend it based on as long as he doesn't do it again, everything will be moved forward. If he does do it again, he'll be subject to this $500 fine plus anything else that may come in the proceeding. So I thought staff did a good job of walking this through and once again shows reasonable work by the North Dakota Public Service Commission staff.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2, I ask that this be withdrawn. And just a little background for my colleagues and staff, because you obviously don't talk directly to advocacy staff unless you're in this setting. I thought the consent order that was very good, except for there was no provision in the consent order that they pay for the damages. And so for me personally, that I always like to see a provision that they're going to pay for the damages. And so if they get that work back out, I'd be happy to move forward with that one. Okay, item BK3. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's Damage Prevention Enforcement Action concerning One Oak Rockies Midstream, LLC, case number GS-14-590.
Second.
One Oak is a Oklahoma limited liability company with principal offices in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Uh-oh, here we go. Conestoga Rovers and Associates, known further as CRA, is a Newark corporation with principal offices in Niagara Falls, New York, and Stevens Drilling and Environmental Services, a Minnesota corporation with its office in Maple Plains, Minnesota. Basically, Stevens is a subcontractor of CRA. In July 14th of this year, the Commission received a North Dakota one-call complaint from CRA alleging a violation by One Oak of North Dakota Century Code one-call system. What's interesting about this one is we continue to have breaking ground in the one-call law. This is the first time we've ever had a complaint filed by someone requesting a locate, and the locate was not done in 48 hours. And so this has a bit of a twist to it. Based on the investigation, staff determined that on June 20th, Stevens Drilling and Environmental Services provided an excavation notice to the North Dakota One-Call Services for work to begin in the area of the intersection of Highway 23 and 31 in McKenzie County. June 20th is a Friday, so the One Oak had until June 24th to do the locate, or they can't do it by that time. Their job is to get back with the person requesting the locate and work something out. Basically, in this case, the One Oak did not complete the locate in 48 hours. They did not request an extension, and so the company doing the work, Stevens, basically pushed back a little bit and said, listen, we've called and we've asked for the locate following the 48 hours. You didn't do it in 48 hours. North Dakota law says you're supposed to do it in 48 hours, so we're filing this complaint. Staff looked through it, and they basically concluded that One Elk did violate the North Dakota Century Code by failing to provide the locate markings within 48 hours of the North Dakota One Call system. And I think it's very reasonable for Stevens to put this in. If the company can't keep up with the locates, all they have to do is let the individual doing the locates know what's going on, have some discussion with them, but they didn't do anything. And we had a contractor following the law, trying to keep busy with pace with their own schedule. And so in this consent order, the commission orders One Elk to pay a fine of $500 to North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of the effective date of this order. I also think this is very reasonable. The $500 fine is not a large fine for a major company like One Elk, but it is the beginning of sending signals to companies on both sides that, one, you need to call before you dig, and, two, the other side is that you do your locates within 48 hours, because we do hear a lot that the companies aren't doing the locates. So thank Victor for putting this together, and once again, we're breaking new ground on the Public Service Commission.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I'd just add that, I think this is the first time that the PSC has fined an operator like this for not doing the locates within the desired or required amount of time. And I think it does send the message that this is a two-way street, that you have to call before you dig. And in order to get people cooperating with that, we have to be responsive in locating in the time frame that is required, so that the contractors can get their work done and not hold people up. Otherwise, you're going to be having contractors discouraged or disincentivized to making the calls. And so it is a two-way street, and I think that this is an appropriate way to send that message and follow through on what's required by law.
Is there any further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Gerald. That concludes my portfolio, Commissioner Christman.
I only have one agenda item, but although it maybe has become routine around here, it should be on the highlight reel, actually. I move the commission accept the Federal Office of Surface Mining's 2014 evaluation report for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program.
Second.
This OSM recently issued its evaluation report for our AML program for the fiscal year that ended on June 30th of 2014. No issues or concerns were raised with OSM, and they continue to report that the Public Service Commission has an efficient and successful AML program. And, you know, we could come up with all kinds of nice things to say, but based on this report, instead of doing that, I can't make this any better than using their words. So I'm going to read you four short quotes out of OSM's report. The state administers an excellent abandoned mine land reclamation program in full compliance with their abandoned mine land reclamation plan. The second one. Reviews of the North Dakota program indicate that the North Dakota Public Service Commission is adhering to the state's policies and procedures regarding opportunities for public participation in all phases of their reclamation program. Third one, the North Dakota Public Service Commission maintains a very cost-effective program with 11% of the grant dedicated to administrative costs. The remainder of the grant is spent on project design and construction. And the fourth one, since the program's inception, the North Dakota Abandoned Mine Land Division has conducted over 155 primary reclamation projects, 29 emergency projects, and numerous construction, maintenance, and sinkhole filling projects at a total cost of over $44 million of federal funds. More than 24 miles of dangerous surface mine pits and high walls, and over 1,600 acres of underground mine subsidence have been reclaimed. That's the end of the quotes. And one thing I'd like to add to them, though, when it mentions the whole history of this program, the $44 million of federal funds, I just want to emphasize these aren't federal funds that are raised through income taxes or by just borrowing the money and letting the next generation pay it off. This is money that is paid by current coal mine operations on a per ton basis on the coal that they're mining now, and they do that I think pretty happily because they want to see some of these historic problem areas fixed up. So I think we should not only be proud of our program, which I really am emphasizing here, but also of the current mining companies because they choose to participate in that. They were glad to get it started. It's not voluntary. But so I recommend the commission accept OSM's 2014 evaluation report for the AML programs, and just want to, again, commend Jim Deutsch and Bill Dodd and the whole team up there, as well as our temporary staff and contractors that we hire in the summer. This is clearly, based on what you read in OSM's evaluation, a model program that we should be really, really proud of.
Oh, thank you, Randy. Jim, same thing. Good work for you and the guys and gals upstairs. It's funny that the program that you administer is still the top part of the nation. Everybody still looks to it, so good work, Jim.
I'll echo those comments and emphasize again, this is reclaimed over 1,600 acres of underground mine subsidence. So that is potentially dangerous territory where people could get harmed or equipment can get damaged. And so it's an important public safety improvement and important public safety service and program that you guys are implementing there that often goes unnoticed but is doing really valuable work out there in our state to keep our rural areas safer. So pass along those kudos to the gang upstairs.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Throw a thought out there. I'll look over at our Stacey Argru with this press release. Worthy, you think, Stace? Good news, right?
It's good news.
What do you think, Randy? Gin something up? Is that okay?
We'll do that.
I was thinking the same thing, actually.
Okay.
Yep, definitely.
All right.
So caught up in the budget that I forgot about that.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I don't have any closing comments, Commissioner Christman.
Oh, that's right.
There's, I don't have any portfolio.
No JF portfolio.
Not today.
No closing comments.
All right, Commissioner Fedorcia?
Me.
All right, any questions for us?
I might as well challenge you. Since you talked about the budget, that the idea is to come up with ways to sell this to the legislature now that it's proposed, give us your best sales plan or your best sales pitch.
For the new programs?
For the new programs.
Well, I think there are really reasonable investments on the state's behalf to take some additional measures out there in the rail side of things to do what we can to help increase the odds of preventing future derailments and accidents. We can never promise the public that we will be able to eliminate those accidents, but a state supplemental rail program will add more inspectors out on the ground, working with the railroads, inspecting the track and inspecting the mechanics, and increasing the odds that you're going to find problems before they result in an accident. And so I think that that's something that we've seen a need for. People are concerned about the safety. The increase in volumes in North Dakota has been substantial. We are at 54 million tons of goods a year. That was last year's number. And so that's up dramatically from the early years of 2000s. And I think we were at 14 million tons then. So we just simply need to start this program and do our part as a state to make sure that the rails are running safely. And they're a vital part of our economy as well. And so I think the rail safety program and these added FTEs will not only help us engage on the safety side of things, but they will also equip the PSC to better interact with the railroads in general on behalf of the citizens of the state. And the railroads are playing a vital role in our economy, transporting a vast majority of our energy and agriculture products. And we need to be equipped as a state to have people, resources, who can advocate for us and not relying on federal folks to make our case for us. And so I think that that's what we will see as a result of this these three new FTEs there. On the pipeline side, I don't know if, Brian, if you want to tackle the pipeline or if you want me to speak on that too.
Whatever you want. I can
go ahead on that one.
I guess I would just lay out is when the three of us got together and submitted the budget, you know, we all have varying degrees of what we think are priorities, and we work together a package of priorities. And our first thing that we agreed on for priorities, number one, was that weights and measures position. So speaking for me, we got to make sure we get that weights and measures position as priority one. So as we develop our budget address, we get to that. And then we get down to the additional natural gas inspector. I think that was one of our number two priority. We've got to get that for the programs that we already have. Julie set up, I think, the rail program very well. And then the only thought I would have in the rail program is I think that the difference between the rail and the pipeline safety program is the rail will be fully state-funded, where the pipeline safety, there will be a federal reimbursement, which will vary anywhere from 60 to 90%. So I think that the discussion that will ensue downstairs is that this is a huge outlay of state resources with no federal reimbursement. So I think the legislators will look at these two differently because of where the dollars come from. And talking now, getting into the hazardous liquid pipeline, I was very pleased to see it in the governor's budget. We have developing more and more miles of intrastate liquids in the state. Up until probably 3 years ago, there just wasn't enough miles in the state of intrastate pipeline, so there would have made no sense to have it. So this is the right time to move forward with the program. There could be upward of 800 miles of intrastate liquid lines in the state. We need to do that. The federal inspectors have acknowledged they don't have enough people to go around. So I think it's very appropriate that we do it. The two challenges I see for the pipeline, hazardous liquid pipeline program, are one is, once again, the dollar amount. And two is the reality that if we're going to do this, we need to pay these individuals a very good salary. We've already seen significant turnover in our natural gas inspectors because once we get them fully trained up, they get offered positions that literally double their salary with the private sector. So we've made the pitch that if we're going to do this program, we need to do it with the right number of people and have the salaries attractive enough to get good people. So that'll be the arguments that we need to make down in the session, that don't give us three people and pay them $20,000 a year because the program's not going to be successful. Give us the three people with that salary range of $70,000 to $80,000 to $90,000 a year so we can retain people, hire people and retain them. So that's the way I see that laying out, Dave, is that I think it's a legislative decision. The governor has advanced the idea that we put forward. And you know, we'll make our pitch forward, but I think that's the pushback that we'll see on those programs is, you know, how much is this going to cost and who's going to pay for it? And there is a difference, too, in the enforcement. The hazardous liquid program, we will be able to do the enforcement of that violations. Where the rail program, we won't actually do the enforcement. We will write the violations up potentially, and then they'll move forward. So it's, I think there's still a value, of course, but there's a difference of who can actually do the enforcement. So I think those will be the arguments that will come at us in different venues, and we'll need to have our discussion points accordingly.
Just to clarify a little bit on the enforcement, it's pretty much what you said with a small tweak, and that is on the rail side. It is 100% state funded and different from the pipelines, because in the pipeline we're basically seeking to take over the program for the feds, and in the rail side we're supplementing the program, so there is no cost share. It's just fully state, and the federal program continues to exist. In terms of enforcement, though, the federal, it's important to know that the state inspectors have the same exact authority as the federal inspectors have on the rail side and would have on the rail side. So when it comes to shutting down a track that they think is questionable or unsafe, or putting a car, marking a car unusable, or requiring them to take certain action in a certain time frame, the state inspectors will have the same exact authority as the federal inspectors. When it comes to a fine, however, the fines are written up and sent away to the regional office, and they process the fines with the railroads. And the local inspectors for the FRA don't get involved in that either. So you're basically, the state inspectors would be functioning very similarly to the federal inspectors in their enforcement actions in state.
I wouldn't add anything to those programs, but I just do want to add a little bit about the one additional FTE that maybe doesn't draw quite as much attention and didn't get a shout out from the governor and the weights and measures person. You know, I think it's one of the fundamental things that we do and that people expect us to do here is to make sure that these measuring devices are accurate. And because, you know, it can be such a small amount that they could be off, but it would be an amount that would cause significant harm to the consumers. and harm that they could, you couldn't logically be expected to notice. So it's an important function here. And over the years, I think because of encouraging privatization and because of encouraging efficiency, this weights and measures program has been able to be pared back. I think at one time there were 7, and then 6, and then 5, and then 4. And last session, the governor recommended removing another employee and getting it down to 3. And, you know, the commission and our employees, we went in and we were supportive of that. We said, you know, it's worked in the past. We've been able to find those efficiencies and encourage that privatization. Let's try it. We want to be as efficient as possible. And I think what we found in the last 2 years is that we feel that we're not getting the ground covered quite as well as we want to be able to do to assure accuracy of these measuring devices. And so it's not like we're really growing a program. We have whittled it way back and found that we finally reached the tipping point, and we need that fourth employee back in order to do a good job for the consumers in the state.
And that could be a symptom of the state getting busier too, I assume.
Well, that's certainly a factor.
We have a lot. We have more scales, more significantly more commercial scales.
Yeah, if the trend line would have continued, 3 might have been okay.
Yeah.
But the trend line's going back the other way.
You get these truck stops with 20 gas pumps. It takes a while to go in and check them all.
Yeah. Even the convenience stores and the cherry berries, and just think of how many commercial scales are out there.
Yep. We do certify cherry berry, just so you know.
I know we do. We talk about it all the time. It's the only way to relate our work to teenagers. They perk up when they think about that scale being off and how much it would cost them per ounce.
Reminds me, we checked that scale in the Capitol, the cafeteria yet, for the salads. Mine seemed a little heavy.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Right, get somebody down there right away.
Please tell me when you do that. Could be a good investigative story.
I'm going to send Brandon and Kyle both in on that
both
one.
Of them. Yeah.
You had mentioned, though, Commissioner Christman, about the abandoned mine land program. There are how many emergencies?
Emergencies.
You said something about emergencies, and I just
emergency fills.
Emergency fills.
There you go. Middle page 6.
Yep, 29.
Okay, you're from that area, of course. Have you seen a lot of that happen?
Well, you know, 2 of them that I'm personally familiar with, and 1 that comes to mind that I've seen photos of that to me just make such classic examples. But up there north of Beulah, at one point, the farmer up there has a pole building, and he basically stored some equipment in there over the winter. And he came in the spring and slid open the door, and his tractor was gone. The sinkhole was directly in his shop, and it caved down in. And then the old bar up there, when it was the Black Diamond, you know, all of a sudden the corner of that had a big sinkhole one time. I mean, it was huge. You wondered if that building was going to cave in, and we were able to. And, of course, that's a very important thing to get that shored up. You don't want to lose something like that. Another one, and I actually don't know where this is, but I'm sure Jim probably knows. But I seen a picture, and it looked like any small town back alley, although I don't know that it was a small town, but it wasn't like behind a large, tall building. It was just like a typical back alley. And there's some people standing around there, and there's like a light pole with a light on it. But it's only, as I recall, maybe waist high to these guys. And that had been a normal, they didn't just mount it on a little fence post. It had been a normal pole. It just fell right down into a hole and almost disappeared. So,
that was out at the old briquetting plant southeast of Dickinson.
Oh, okay. So these are the kinds of emergency cases where we, you know, don't bid them out and plan them all summer, but we always have some money on reserve to hit those kinds of projects.
Just mention on that, we probably had more than that because sometimes in the fall or whenever doing these sinkhole filling projects, if one of these develop, we have an ongoing project, we'll go ahead and
sure.
take care of that right away and not go to Los Angeles to have it declared as emergency. And at one time, there was a separate pool of funds available for that where it didn't come out of a bigger grant. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit differently. In fact, we just received a call from somebody up by Zap today about a large sinkhole that's right in the County Road ditch. So that's something we have to get taken care of that fairly soon.
Sure.
Okay. Thanks, Jim.
But to clarify, the black diamond bar is okay?
It was shored up. Right. No one got hurt. And
and that's it. Anything else, Dave?
That's pretty good.
All right. Okay. Well, is there anything else, commissioners?
Mm-hmm.
Should we go right into our admin portion?
Sure.
All right. We'll close the regular scheduled meeting. At this time, we'll come right back in admin.